Let's open our Bibles again to Ephesians chapter 6. I suppose one of the worst things that could happen if you were in a battle, in a war, would be to be caught off guard with your defenses down. On a Sunday morning, 1941, a little before 8 o'clock in the morning, Japanese launched an attack on Pearl Harbor. U.S. forces were basically sleeping and defenseless, not prepared, not ready. And it was a decisive victory, of course, for the Japanese. Some 2,400 U.S. Servicemen killed. They weren't ready. They didn't have their defenses up. They weren't prepared. And therefore, they were sitting ducks, unfortunately. And the Lord doesn't want that to happen to us. We are engaged in a spiritual conflict. We're engaged in a long war, a long battle. It's described for us in Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. This war is raging, and it is a long conflict. We know, because we can read, unlike in other wars, we can read about the end before it happens. We know who's going to be victorious. We know that in the end, the Lord and his armies are going to be standing, and the forces that are arrayed against him will be defeated. So we know how it's going to end. But what's unknown is how many casualties there will be along the way. We know also, personally, we know of people, of course, all of us do, who have been casualties in this conflict, whose faith has been shipwrecked along the way, who have been overcome by temptation and overcome in sin, who have been taken captive by some false teaching or some false idea that has led them away from the truth. And so we know the enemy is out there. We know that he's launching attacks. We know that he is sometimes successful. And so it is on this Sunday morning, as we are here together, it's as if a group of soldiers having a muster in between battles, talking about things. Here we are. We've come this far. We want to continue to be faithful. We don't want to be overtaken. We don't want to be caught off guard. We don't want to be defeated or hurt by the enemy. And so we have to prepare, because we're going to go out again, and the enemy's still going to be out there, and the battle's still going to be raging. And so we have these instructions here on how we can be prepared for this spiritual conflict, how we can be armed and ready. As we think through these, we're going to go through these, the armor of God that he talks about here, put on the whole armor of God. And as we think through these, let's think through the importance of each one and how vulnerable we would be without it in the conflict in which we are engaged. First, he starts in verse 14 with somewhat of a surprising one. Stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth. Now, if I know that the image here, and if you want to just picture in your mind a Roman soldier, that seems to be the image that Paul is borrowing, something that would have been familiar to them. They would have seen the centurions and the soldiers stationed all over the Roman Empire. Wherever you read this letter, they would have all been familiar with the way a Roman soldier looked. And so if you kind of picture that he picks some of those, the things that they wore to use to make these spiritual applications. But he starts with a belt. From what I understand, the word belt is not in the original. What it simply says is having gird yourself with truth. So in other words, to fasten the truth around yourself. And what do you fasten around yourself but a belt? And so the word belt is kind of implied there, but the emphasis is not so much on the belt itself, but on the truth and on the fastening it around yourself. And I like that image, if you think about it. If we're going to go out into this conflict, almost before we even think about all the rest of the armor that you might think would be more essential, the things like the helmet and the shield and sword, But it begins with this, you know, begin putting on the armor. The first thing that we do there is wrap this belt around and fasten it on good. And what is that but the truth? In a war, a spiritual war of ideas, and in a war for your mind and your heart, the danger is that there's so much falsehood, so many lies, so much distortion. And that's really where we are in danger. That's where we're vulnerable. If we don't begin at the very beginning of getting ready for this by having the truth fastened around us. And so as we think about what does that mean, I suggest to you that we need to consider what are we listening to? So truth is a message. We know that the wisdom from above is true, that God gives us truth. But there's so many other messages out there. And so as we go about our day-to-day lives, what are we piping into our minds? What are we tapping into and connecting to and then contemplating and thinking about? If it's not the Lord's truth, if that's not a key part of what we are wrapping around ourselves before we go out into the world, then we're going to be vulnerable as we go out. We're going to be vulnerable to attack from things that are not true, from things that go against what the Lord has given us. The next thing he says is still there in verse 14, having put on the breastplate of righteousness. So if you can just imagine kind of getting dressed for this battle, you get up and maybe, you know, you have your tunic or whatever's on underneath. First thing is this belt that goes on and gets latched on in place. And then there's some kind of a breastplate that goes on around that, protect your vital organs. That's even, you know, a lot of this stuff has changed because of modern warfare. A lot of the types of armor and types of things, but some of them are still in effect. And one of the things people still do is wear bulletproof vests. And, you know, even, you know, presidents and things. I remember seeing George Bush after 9/11 went out and threw that first pitch in the World Series. They talked about one of the things that was impressive about that was he was wearing a bulletproof vest, you know, throwing a baseball. But what, of all the things, you would think, well, you're so vulnerable anyway, but we all understand that, like, they're your vital organs here. And so if you're going to protect something, you know, you need to have at least a protection on that protects this area because we're so vulnerable and exposed there, and an injury there could be devastating. So there's this breastplate. I was looking at one of these words. I was just curious. It's interesting. The word there in Greek is for breastplate is thorax, which you might know. This is your thorax. And so I didn't know that. That was just kind of interesting, a little tidbit. But your thorax. And what is our breastplate? It is righteousness. So that's interesting. If you would turn me to James chapter 1, of course, we'll come right back there if you want to hold your place in Ephesians 6, but let's go over to James 1. Righteousness is living in harmony with God's law, doing what's right. So the truth is a message. It's facts and ideas. Righteousness is living according to that truth. So we start with the truth, but then you have to put it into practice. And James warns about what would be the opposite of that. What if you had the truth, but you didn't live by it? Well, James 1, verse 19 beginning says, know this, my beloved brothers, let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness. Receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. It's not enough just to hear the word. So we strap on the truth. We gird ourselves with truth. But this breastplate, the next step of the armor here, is actually living by what we've heard. Otherwise, if we just hear it, but we don't do it, it would be like going out into this conflict completely exposed where we're most vulnerable, completely open to attack with no protection. We protect ourselves from the enemy when we live by what we have heard and put it into practice. So to think of a very practical way, even in this very context, he started with, let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, and he warns about the danger of wrath. So let's say we've all heard that. We've all heard it growing up. But what if we just let that bounce off of us and we don't live by it? What would that look like? Well, it would be somebody who spouts off without first thinking, who is quick to speak and slow to hear, who's quick-tempered, not in control of their passions. Now, if you go out into the world that way, are you a sitting duck for the enemy's attacks? Absolutely. If you just fire off at the mouth and you've got that hot temper and you just say stuff and without thinking about it, Satan is going to just have his way with you. You're easy target. Back in Ephesians, we're in chapter 6, but back in chapter 4, you'll recall he talked about warning against the danger of unchecked anger. He says in verse 26 of chapter 4, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger, and give no opportunity to the devil." This is just one little bit of teaching amongst a whole bunch of others. But just to take this as an example, if we hear that, but we don't put it into practice, and so we go around hot-tempered, you're just vulnerable. That's what he's saying here. You're giving an opportunity to the devil. You're going into battle completely unprotected against you make yourself an easy target for sin because you're not applying what you've heard to your life. On the flip side, if we hear these things and we recognize I need to work on that, so we try to improve, we try to live by what we've learned, it's like putting on this protective bulletproof vest or this breastplate that's going to protect us against so many temptations that would make us want to say the wrong thing, act the wrong way, do the wrong kind of things, tempt us into sin. The next thing is interesting, verse 15 in chapter 6, back in chapter 6 now. "And as shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace." So, I can't even imagine going into battle barefoot in any age. I can't imagine doing much of anything barefoot. You know, they called us tenderfoot. But that would definitely be me. If I have to walk outside without my shoes on, you know, that's the effect of wearing shoes all the time. Your feet are tender. It's hard. You remember being a kid? Anyway, running around in the summer, you get tough. But anyway, we are most of those tenderfoot people. So imagine going out into conflict and you're barefoot. And you'd be very vulnerable if your feet aren't protected. So you're going to lace up and put on these shoes for battle. And what are the shoes? It's interesting that our footwear is the readiness given by the gospel of peace. There's an interesting connection between feet and the gospel. In Romans 10:15, you might recall it, he quotes from the Old Testament. He says, "How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news." Why feet in the gospel? I suggest to you it is because the gospel is a motivating message that requires going. You know, Jesus said, "Go and into all the world. Go, take this message and go." It's not just something that you receive and stay where you are, but it is something that requires going. And so when you think about this, how beautiful are the feet of those who, you know, preach the gospel or preach the good news or share the good message. It is the idea of somebody taking what they've heard and then going. And so their feet represent the part of them that's carrying them somewhere. And so I don't know if that's necessarily related to this, but I just think it's interesting that in this passage he says, when you lace up your shoes, you're putting on the readiness given by the gospel. So we need this eagerness to go, but that eagerness to go needs to be matched with a readiness, a preparation. It wouldn't do very, very good to be all motivated to go out into the world if we're not first prepared. And how do we get prepared to go? It's the preparation that comes from the gospel of peace. Sometimes people are really motivated, especially new converts, to share what they've heard and learned. And that's a good thing. But we really have to be taught and be ready and be prepared when we go, or else we're going to be vulnerable like going out barefoot. So we want to have our shoes on, and the shoes come with that preparation. And that, there's no easy way to get that. That just takes time. It takes putting in the effort, training, so we're able to handle accurately the word. We're able to use it in the right way. If we're not, then we're vulnerable, like children who are just on the milk. We're vulnerable to attack. So we want to have our shoes on that come with this preparation from the gospel. Now back again, verse 16. In all circumstances, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish the flaming darts of the evil one. Shields are another thing that are still used, not necessarily in on a modern battlefield, but we saw, like at that clash at the Capitol, we saw a lot of shields. You see on these protests around the world, but a lot of people still coming out with a shield, and then you see people, throwing things, and that's more like, I think, the old type of warfare where they were, it was swords and spears and arrows. So imagine how valuable having a shield would be if you were going up. I guess I'm holding it the wrong way. You'd have your sword in your right hand. Having a shield that you would go up with, whether somebody's slashing at you with a sword or they're trying to prod you with a spear or they're shooting something at you, you could block it and protect yourself with this shield. And in our case, he says that the devil is firing these flaming darts. Another translation I read said flaming arrows. I can't really figure out what a flaming dart would be, but a lot of battles, they dip their arrows in something on fire and they shoot them into the air. So imagine you're walking across a battlefield and you see in the sky arrows being launched up into the air and they're on fire and they're coming your way. If you've got a shield and you can block them, that would be a great protection. If you don't have that, think of how vulnerable you would feel running around hoping not to get hit by one of these flaming darts, one of these flaming arrows that's, launched into the air. So what is our shield? The shield, he says, is faith. Now, faith itself, I think it's important to recognize, is a choice. It's always been a choice. Faith is a choice to what? To believe. A choice to trust. A choice to obey. So we could spend weeks and weeks and weeks. It's really the whole story of the Bible is about faith. And you could look at example after example after example. But what you will see in all of them, what they have in common is, you just think to yourself, a person who exemplified faith in the Bible, and here's what's true about that person. They believed what they heard, they trusted God, and they did what he said. When they did that, just pick any example you want. They were nearly indestructible. I mean, they could stand up against any enemy. They could overcome any odds. They could be thrown in a fiery furnace. They could take out a giant. There was nothing that could, not because they became so strong, but because the Lord was working through them and for them. And what God has always wanted from the very beginning until this very moment in time is he's wanted people who would put their faith in him. So when we trust God and when we believe him, and we act on that trust, then we're showing faith, and we have our shield ready. And when things come our way, when arguments come our way, when trials come our way, when temptations come our way, when Satan's throwing everything he can at us, if we will trust God and have our faith intact and hold on to that, then we can protect ourselves from those attacks. And Jesus is a great example of this when he was tempted. He kept trusting God. He kept trusting God. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. He trusted in God, and he passed the test. He had his shield ready against all those attacks from Satan. The next one is the helmet of salvation. As he goes on in that same verse, the helmet of salvation. This is another one that has continued into modern day. We recognize, even modern soldiers, the value of protecting our heads. This is obviously a stronger than this, but a very vulnerable thing in the sense that an injury here could be life-ending. So we protect our heads. One of the guys that taught at the jail studies that we used to be able to do before COVID, Paul, told a story about being in Vietnam, and he was in a helicopter, and he was shot, and it hit his helmet. And he kept his helmet. It was scarred up, and the helmet itself was damaged from this bullet that hit the helmet. You can only have to assume he probably would have died if he hadn't had that helmet on. And he had to, what a crazy thing. I can't even imagine what that would feel like to feel a thing glancing off, but to know that this thing that was on your head saved your life. So what's our helmet in this battle where stuff's flying through the air at us, and Satan is out to get us and the enemy is attacking? Our helmet, of course, is salvation. Now, that's an interesting one. How do we put on a helmet of salvation? I would suggest maybe the idea, when you think about putting on salvation, is it at its core, it's just accepting the gospel message. It's accepting the forgiveness and the salvation that Jesus offers to us through his message. What would be the opposite of that? It would be listening and hearing it, but not acting on, not accepting it. Like Felix, who said, "Go away for the moment. I'll call you again when there's a better time. You know, I'll hear about. I'll listen some more. You can tell me about this later." And he put it off. And unfortunately, many people hear lesson after lesson and spend maybe even years in, you know, hearing lessons and Bible studies and family members talking to them, but they never accept that message. And I would suggest that that's the same thing as never putting on this helmet of salvation, protecting your brain, your head, you know, from the attacks of the enemies. If you don't act on the very basic call, the basic invitation, then you're obviously, you're just exposed, especially in a world where there's flying arrows, your head's exposed. So it begins with accepting the salvation of the Lord. And then verse 17 says, "And the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God." Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. We'll be going there in a couple of weeks in our Bible study, but let's go ahead and jump over there for a moment. 2 Corinthians. Imagine, especially in the old days when people fought with swords and such things, running out into battle and realizing you forgot your sword. Probably the modern equivalent of that would be, and I even heard, you know, you heard again about, I keep thinking about this capital business, but sometimes they, for whatever reason, they send soldiers, but they don't give them ammunition or they don't give them rifles. It's like, you go do this thing, but I'm not going to give you the weapons you need. So imagine you're going into a conflict and you're unarmed. You're going out to face down some threat and you aren't given a weapon to fight back or to protect yourself. And that would be like going into battle and not having some weapon, not having your sword. So in our case, the sword is the word, and it's very powerful. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians 10, beginning verse 3, "Though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine authority to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ." He's talking here as an apostle, but I think this applies to us as well. We have this same sword. And notice what we're using it to defend against. It's things like arguments and opinions raised against the knowledge of God. So you have the truth. Remember, we started by buckling on the truth. But then you have these lies, and you have these attacks. You have these opinions. You have these statements that people are saying, you know, that's not right, and that's not true. And have you ever thought about this? Have you heard that? Or this is what I think. This is what I read. Is this true? It's all this stuff. And if you have the truth, we can wield that to protect ourselves against these attacks. But what if you don't? What if you don't know the truth? What if you're not familiar? What if you have no idea what it actually says? Then again, it would be like running out into some battle with no weapon. People are attacking you and you have no way to defend yourself because you don't have the knowledge of the word. If we're going to use this to defeat these arguments and opinions and falsehoods, then we have to be familiar with this weapon. Now let's go one more place, 2 Timothy 2. 2 Timothy 2. I think it's important as we consider that we remember who the enemy is and who the enemy is not. He said there, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. He said that also in 2 Corinthians 10, that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. We're not trying to take this sword and defeat and hurt other people, okay? We're taking the sword and we're using it to defeat lies and falsehoods, but the enemy is not other people. The other people have been taken captive by the enemy, and we want to win them back to the Lord. That's what Paul says here in 2 Timothy 2, beginning verse 24. The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. The people that we encounter who are might feel like enemies because they're attacking us, you know, it feels like it's coming from them, they're like prisoners of war. They've been captured by the enemy. And our goal is not to just destroy that person, but our goal would be to skillfully destroy the argument and help them escape from having been captured by the enemy. And that's an important distinction to remember who the enemy actually is and who the enemy is not. The enemy is Satan and the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. That's who our fight is with. The people that we encounter may be captured by him and on his side. We hope to save them. We hope that they are. And that takes a lot. That takes the right attitude. It takes skillful use of the word. It takes, you know, understanding who the enemy is and who the enemy is not so that we don't use it incorrectly. And then finally, let's go back to Ephesians 6 and wrap up. So that's all there is for the armor, but he goes on to talk about how we can prevent, how we can be ready and be prepared, and it has to do with prayer. Beginning in chapter 6, verse 18, continuing the sentence, praying at all times in the Spirit with all prayer and supplication. To that end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all the saints. Also for me, that words may be given me in opening my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel, for which I'm an ambassador in chains, that I may declare it boldly as I ought to speak. He says basically three times there, praying. Verse 18, praying at all times. Actually, again, with all prayer and supplication, praying for all the saints, and also pray for me. Pray, 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 pray. And he says, to that end, he says, keeping alert. So this goes back to Pearl Harbor. They're all sleeping in. It's a sleepy Sunday morning. I mean, I don't know what all they were doing, but they weren't ready. They were caught off guard. When the bombs, when the planes were heard in the skies and the bombs started falling, it was too late then to get ready. So how do we avoid being caught off guard? The key is pray, pray, pray. How does prayer keep us on guard? Even think about the model prayer that Jesus gave. He said, pray like this. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done. Give us this day our daily bread. And deliver us from evil. Right? And so even in that, it's an awareness of we're going to face Satan. We're going to face temptation. We need God's help. But when you say a prayer like that, when you pray and you begin the day and end the day and during the day, you're praying for strength and for wisdom and to deliver you from temptation, it keeps you on guard, keeps you on your toes because you're thinking about the fact that there's an enemy out there, so you're not going to be just sort of asleep and vulnerable. So to take all this and imagine the worst case scenario. You're startled awake, you're living in one of those old times, you're in a tent or whatever, you run out, you basically just got on your nightshirt or whatever you're sleeping in, you've got no shoes on your feet, no belt, no sword, no shield, no helmet, you're running around and there's arrows flying through the air. What kind of chances do you have? You're not going to, it's not if, but when you're going to get hit and taken out. That would be the case of a Christian who does not have the truth, who is not trying to live by it, who is not living by faith, who has not accepted the Lord's salvation, who has no word. On the other hand, if we will do what he says and we'll put on this armor, then we'll stand in the Lord's strength by the power of his might through prayer, and we will be protected and we'll be safe from the attacks of the evil one. And we're guaranteed to win if we will stand on the Lord's side and take our stand with him. But we have things we have to do to be prepared and ready. Perhaps there's someone here this morning. Speaking of accepting that invitation, let me start this again.